It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, learn about how at-home DNA tests are being used by police to track down criminals and talk about some ethical questions that raises. Now, it's been a busy week for news on the Russia investigation. First, a legal filing showed Paul Manafort was sharing Trump polling data with Russian contacts in 2016. The Washington Post reported on the lengths President Trump has gone to conceal what he's talked about with Russian President Vladimir Putin, reportedly even keeping the details from top administration officials. And a story in the New York Times says the FBI opened a counterintelligence investigation into the president last year. That investigation was reportedly to determine whether or not the president was working on behalf of Russia, wittingly or unwittingly. Here's President Trump responding to that last story this morning at the White House.
I never worked for Russia. And you know that answer better than anybody. I never worked for Russia. Not only did I never work for Russia, I think it's a disgrace that you even asked that question, because it's a whole big fat hoax. It's just a hoax.
Lowell Barrington is an associate professor and chair of the political science department at Marquette University. Lowell, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, a lot going on over the last week. Let's start with this New York Times report. How big a deal is it that the FBI apparently opened this investigation into whether President Trump had intentionally or unintentionally fired James Comey on behalf of Russia?
Well, this is a very important story in a lot of ways. I think it's in some ways to people perhaps not a complete surprise that they did this, but it's still, I think, a quite interesting and important development, because it acknowledges, really in some ways for the first time, that the president himself was a target of an investigation, in this case a counterintelligence investigation. And while it's, you know, it does not mean there will be detailed evidence that there was direct involvement in a conspiracy by President Trump against the United States, and the FBI was certainly investigating a range of options, including this was sort of just innocent naivete on his part. But the other extreme, for them to be considering the idea that he was taking, in fact, direction from and acting in the interests of Russia, even if it meant going against U.S. interests, I mean, that's an incredibly important and certainly quite unprecedented story.
Benjamin Wittes on the Lawfare blog wrote that this might connect a couple things that we hadn't thought were connected before. We used to think there was a Russia probe and then there was an obstruction of justice probe, and maybe that the firing of James Comey could be viewed as an obstruction of justice. This in some ways connects the dots between their foreign intelligence probe and their criminal probe here in the United States.
I think that was a very interesting point by Ben Wittes. I actually saw him talking about this as well after that post. And I think it is true that the collusion conspiracy stream that would include Trump or Trump advisors, and the obstruction of justice stream in terms of investigating the president or other high-ranking officials, have also, I mean, been talked about quite a bit as separate streams. And in fact, there's a really good reason now, I think, to think that, in fact, the obstruction of justice might have been part of an ongoing conspiracy, including well after President Trump took office. And I found this very interesting. I found it quite compelling. I would go one step further and link it also to something we've talked about, which is the third stream that we sometimes don't think about as an ongoing third stream is the potential to look at financial crimes that are uncovered during the investigation. And I think when we start to ask some of the questions about why we see the things that may be happening in the areas of obstruction of justice or possible collusion, I think that financial crimes question is a kind of third piece that may also be intertwined with the other two.
Now, one tricky thing in talking about the Mueller probe is, for the most part, it seems like we don't know what Mueller and his team are doing until they issue an indictment. There's not a lot of leaking going on. So with this early, this pre-Mueller investigation, looking at the president, that may be ongoing with Robert Mueller. It may have nothing to do with what he's doing right now. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so, although my understanding is that Mueller would have been brought into this investigation or been brought up to speed on it once he took the position of special counsel. So I believe he would have been in the loop. We don't know, again, whether this has already been wrapped up and there's findings already about it one way or the other. The thing I would say is rule number one in this story is always that Mueller knew all this months ago. And so when we're surprised by new things, we have to realize this is something that he knew about and had been working on for a long time now. And I think in this case, again, he would have been brought in quite early on and really was very aware of what was going on. And therefore, again, we won't probably find out things, as you said, unless there's an indictment, which in this case, again, would be unusual because we're really talking, again, about a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation. But where we would get details about this, if Mueller is going to provide them, would be in his final report.
Now, the president this morning said he had not worked with the Russians. He said in an interview over the weekend he found questions about this insulting. The president's narrative has been, and some of his team, that there have been politically motivated investigations led by partisan agents, administrators within the FBI. With this new information, this report of this earlier FBI investigation, what do you make of the president's case about the FBI?
Well, and we're still seeing this take on the FBI today all over sort of things online about this is actually, for some in the country, further proof of this deep state targeting of President Trump. I think the people who are involved in this and the people who, again, would have been involved as it moved to the Mueller team, these are really serious people, and they take very seriously this question. All the way from the extreme of this was innocent and not a problem to, you know, there were things going on here that really did look like President Trump was taking actions that certainly Russia was very happy about and trying to connect dots as to why that would be. So, again, I don't accept the idea this is a politically motivated investigation. Many of the people who are key players in this investigation have now been appointed by the Trump administration. They were not leftovers at all at this point from, you know, the Obama administration. So I think that claim is really getting kind of increasingly on thin ice over the time that we've moved forward.
Talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University, looking at some of the latest news in Russia probe-related developments. Lowell, we saw last week, because of a poorly redacted legal document from Paul Manafort's team, apparently he's accused of supplying polling information, including some private Trump campaign polling information, to Russian contacts while Paul Manafort was campaign manager. How big a deal is that story?
Well, again, I think it's an interesting story, and I think it got some attention because it raises interesting kind of why was this going on questions. I am actually less concerned about this from a question of whether it was legal or not for Manafort to do this. I think it probably was legal. I think one of the few things Rudy Giuliani has gotten right in the last few months is that Manafort shouldn't have done this, but it probably, you know, isn't illegal. But I will say that the question of why he was sharing these data is the troubling part for me and for a lot of people. I think it, you know, it could be part of this idea of kind of keeping people like Kalimnik in the loop about the campaign. He owed Oleg Deripaska money and wanted that debt forgiven, and Kalimnik and Deripaska know each other well. And, I mean, there could have been some parts of this that, again, were not quite as deep of a kind of conspiracy-type collusion as some are saying. But it also could have been that, and it really boils down to, again, why the data were given and how they were used. So if these data were used by Russia, for example, to target particular states in the United States, and we know that Russia was much more aggressive in its online attacks in the United States on certain states, and that includes Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and others that, again, proved to be very important in the final outcome. So if those data were used to help the Russians and work with the Russians to formulate an action against the U.S. election, that certainly would be an incredibly important story at that point.
Also out there, a Washington Post story about President Trump concealing apparently details of conversations between himself and President Putin from Russia. This is something that, you know, we in the public don't generally get to read transcripts, but it sounds like concealing information about these meetings, interpreters' notes, that kind of thing, even from some of his closest staff. Nothing illegal here, I don't think, but a bit unusual.
Definitely unusual, and I think, again, what's unusual in the first place was the number of these one-on-one meetings where there weren't other people in the room besides translators. Again, that's not something we tend to see. The president would want people in the room with foreign policy expertise, with knowledge of the country that he is speaking with, that country's leader at the time. So I think the meetings in the first place are a concern. And certainly there was some effort to keep the information from advisors in his own administration about what was discussed. And as somebody who works in the region, the person I was really concerned to hear about was Fiona Hill, who's the main White House advisor on Russia and well-respected, I think, in the Russian studies community, that she specifically asked the interpreter to talk to her about what had gone on in the meeting, and the person refused to do that because they had been told not to talk to her about it. That's, again, a really big concern because it means if the chief advisor on Russia is out of the loop on conversations like this, we're just not ready to formulate responses, for example, to claims that Russia might make about what was said. And that's one of the concerns people have, is without a record of what was said, we are certainly vulnerable to Russia making statements about things that the president, for example, had promised without others in the room to you know, in fact, challenge that claim by Russia.
Stepping back a bit, one big picture item that's changed in the last month is there's a Democratic majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. Does that change how the investigation goes? Does this add new wrinkles?
I think the things that have gone on in the last couple of weeks have given even more of a sense of urgency to Democrats who will now control this process in the House to hold hearings and to issue subpoenas that they now have the power to do. One of the things the Republicans had done in the past was to change this so that only the chair of the committee in the House needed to support issuing a subpoena for bringing somebody to testify, and that was convenient when they controlled the House. It's now going to be very inconvenient for the White House because the Democrats will control that subpoena power, and I think we can expect a lot of investigations, both Russia-related, but I think a lot of other investigations as well, and hearings on just basic things about government agencies and things where there was not a lot of oversight on the legislative side in the last 2 years.
Finally, a new presidential campaign is kicking off now. Has anything changed in the United States that would make it harder for, say, Russia to interfere with our elections again?
Well, that's the really important question looking ahead, and it's something I think we still don't have a great answer on. I think we were all very concerned about 2018, that there had not seemed to have been enough preparation, but I think for the most part, people feel like to the extent that there were some things going on in 2018, it was a bit less than 2016. So we may be in better shape. But again, one of the things about a country like Russia is they always probe and target and do things and then learn and try different things down the road. So we also can't assume because we had one election that went a little better or that we know what they did in 2016 that means we're ready for 2020. They are likely working on different things that they would have not tried earlier, but will now try in future elections.
Lowell, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
Lowell Barrington is an associate professor and chair of the political science department at Marquette University. He was with us to talk about some of the latest developments in the Trump-Russia probe, including, among other things, news that the FBI had opened a counterintelligence investigation into President Trump last year.